Hello, everyone. My name is Doug Woodard, executive coach with Advisor Game Plan. Welcome to the Thriving Sports Podcast, our public podcast available to everyone. We do have two podcasts. Number one is a client-only private podcast called Thriving Coaches. And number two is this public podcast available to everyone. In this public podcast, in each episode, we'll be talking to a successful coach or leader about specific ways they enhance their team's culture and player development, as well as many other valuable topics.
And I'm Brian Willett, founder and CEO of Advisor Game Plan. I don't know about you, but I'm excited to sit back and learn from each of these episodes with these amazing coaches. Thank you for joining us as we dive deeper into these areas that can lift a team from average to good to great.
Welcome, everybody. Lucky today to be here with Coach Alan Huss. He and his wife, Katie, freshly back to Creighton. I have two daughters, I believe, Nikki playing basketball, I think still at Truman State, Mary still in high school, maybe more of a volleyball type type look there, which is awesome. Alan began his career, coaching career at the high school prep level at Culver Military Academy and a national prep power, La Lemire, and Mexico, New Mexico for 3 years, Creighton for six, I believe the previous two at High Point, where he was two-time conference coach of the year, the first High Point NCAA tournament appearance, and supposedly, I've never been to High Point, but supposedly absolutely a beautiful campus. Coach, welcome back. How's the move gone, I guess, first off, with you and the family?
It's great to be back. We're still getting settled. Anytime you move with teenage girls, it's a challenge. Fortunately for us, we're moving back closer to my daughter that's at Truman, so it's nice to be able to see her a little bit more frequently. And being back, my younger daughter kind of reconnecting with her friends, my wife reconnecting with her friends, all that's been a little different than a typical move when you're moving back to a place for a third time now for us. So we're excited. We're excited about the challenges that are still in front of us. We're excited to be back in Omaha around so many friends and family.
That's awesome. And I guess something just kind of occurred to me, Coach, when you played here, could you have in your wildest dreams foreseen what Creighton would become? I mean, I think anybody would say a perennial, you know, top 20 program, wonderful facilities. Did you have any inkling of that was in the offing?
Well, Rass went into the Hall of Fame last night, and he was telling some of his stories about arriving in 1980 and the challenges, the resources or lack thereof back in those days. And obviously, I didn't get to experience that. When I arrived in fall of 97, obviously, a decade and a half since Rass had gotten here, things had improved dramatically. But to envision this would have been, anyone that said that they had visions of this, other than maybe Rass, would have just been lying. I mean, we played in the Civic, the first couple of years, we struggled to fill that building. Towards the end of my career, we were fortunate to have some good players and good teams, and we started to do a little bit better there as far as attendance went and having a product that Omaha started to get behind. But no, the Big East, and to be able to compete against the people we compete against. No, I don't think anyone, probably not even Rass, could have truly envisioned this.
Yeah, it's awesome. And you bring up Rass. I mean, what vision because I know a lot of people thought that the whole venture into the Big East, into at the time CenturyLink, was misguided and was doomed for failure. And it's been exactly the opposite. So he richly deserves everything from the Hall of Fame perspective.
Absolutely.
Coach, can you talk just a little bit, and really appreciate, again, you taking the time here, but can you talk a little bit about your journey to become an associate head coach in waiting here at Creighton, which is, of course, as we mentioned, your alma mater, to the steps that it's taken, some things maybe you've learned along the way, mentors maybe that you appreciate, that kind of thing.
I mean, I took a very odd path to get where I am. I don't know that there is a truly like a normal linear path that anyone takes that's sitting in a seat similar to mine. I think everyone's path is a little bit unique. You need to have good fortune, but a lot of things just fall your way and go your way. Obviously, there's a certain level of hard work that goes into it. But in addition to that, you have to be incredibly lucky. And I'm the first one that realizes that the series of great things that have happened in my life that, you know, I've had no hand in is just, it's a long list. I love being a high school basketball coach. I did it because I wanted to be involved in basketball. I was working a few kids out there. I don't even think it was training at that point. I don't think it would have been formally named when I started, but just a couple of kids in town knew that I'd played Division I basketball, and I was watching what they were doing, and I was like, this isn't very good. Maybe we can be impactful here. I've given them a little bit more purpose, some direction. A couple of those players ended up being great players that I was working with. Then I became a high school coach and a public school coach, a private school coach, a boarding school coach. And to be perfectly honest, I had always just envisioned myself as a high school coach. That was just kind of what I thought I was. I loved that level. In particular, I love Lalamere. I love boarding school life. Many people don't understand that some of these prep programs, they're not all created equally. And a place like Lalamere, where there's these unbelievably difficult academic standards, it's difficult to get kids admitted. It's difficult for kids to do the academic workload that's required of them there. But then to have, you know, 5 or 6, 7 high major players and some other guys with aspirations to go to Ivy League schools and the most selective schools in the country academically, when that's your core every year, I didn't think it got any better than that. I had great kids in our league at the time, the people we competed against nationally for national titles. We had a lot more challenges than some of the other people, which led to us not always having the most talented roster. And I think that, you know, my assistant coaches that helped along the way and helped us get to the places that we got there probably get most of the credit. As you know, when you're a high school coach, you're only as good as two things, in my opinion, your administration and your assistant coaches. The high school coach, the head coach always gets all the credit and blame, but truly it has a lot more to do with those assistant coaches. And it's kind of crazy. One of my guys that worked for me now is the head basketball coach at our Incarnate Word. They're going to be picked to win the Southland Conference this year. So I guess I have my own little coaching tree from my high school days. And, you know, I start thinking about all the people that impacted me and my journey along the way. Obviously, the guys I played for, Coach Altman, Grinsing, Gordy, those guys, McKenna that coached me in college, Darren DeVries, you know, those guys. That's the only basketball I ever learned, because when I jumped into high school basketball, I after 18 months, I was a head coach. And so I didn't know anything about coaching. I just kind of figured it out. So a lot of times I had this inverse relationship with my assistant coaches that most do. I was learning more from a lot of my experienced assistant coaches than they were probably learning from me. I knew basic basketball principles, but when it came to actually how to implement things, I had this odd reverse learning curve. And so I think in particular, Glenn Heffman and Art Walker, you know, and Alan Hugler, some of these guys that were all those guys had experience at the college level in the past. Those guys really helped me learn when I was a young snot-nosed kid that knew nothing and thought I knew everything. So I could go on and on about this, but just there's so many people. And I, like I said, good fortune and good people around me have helped pave this path for certain.
You mentioned you thought you knew everything. I think maybe we all at some point maybe thought something like that, and then our heads bump up against reality, and this game can humble you pretty quick if you're not careful. Coach, you mentioned something. You said when you kind of first began that you were working some kids out, and I think you've obviously had tremendous, I think, reputation and experience both at the prep and the college levels in that area, individual player development, maybe centered towards, but not limited to bigs in any way, I don't think. But can you speak to something that you think is worthy of more time emphasis, either making an already existent strength into more of a strength or an improving on an area of weakness?
Yeah, I think when you look at this, I reduce it down to an even lower level. I think this is maybe the most important ingredient that's missed. And it's, I think, because in our generation, when we grew up, this was not part of the equation. But I think what's allowed me to find success in this space is really simple: helping players understand why we do everything. Whether it's a team concept or an individual concept, when we grew up, you did it because the coach said so.
Right.
And now there's this unbelievable wealth of information at everyone's fingertips. So they have all these external pieces of information coming at them from every direction. They all have all these different people telling them something different. So helping players understand the why. Why do we practice things game speed? Why is this footwork so important? And I think what's allowed me to find success is probably what was my greatest challenge as a player, is I was curious to a fault sometimes as to why we did things. I questioned things. But I also understand from that mentality as a player that other players are doing the same. I wanted to understand why. I wanted to understand why it worked. And then once I did, I knew that, you know, I could get behind the idea. But I think that's the, especially in the player development space, why do we have to make things look a certain way? As it relates to big guys, I think I have an advantage because I am a big guy, and so many of these guys, bigger players, haven't had the opportunity to really work with a guy that looks like them. And they, you know, they've been yelled at for not finishing by, you know, some guard coach or, you know, just whatever the thing is that they choose to kind of pick on. And I think I think I'm able to connect with those guys a little differently. Talked to them. I understand, like I was, since I am 6'9", I wanted to be a complete basketball player. I didn't want to be a guy that went block to block and stood there and got in the way. And so I think meeting those guys on that level and explaining to them that while that's a central piece to what we're trying to get better at right now, you've got to be a complete player. You've got to be able to dribble, pass, shoot, and more importantly, think. You know, and I think even when I coach, when it relates to big players, I think Mac and probably everybody here will tell you there's an attention to detail when it comes to what we demand out of our big players, the way we play here at Creighton, that I think it works with the players. We make them feel a little bit more engaged with those bigger guys because they understand that they have to quarterback our system. And again, getting into dribble, pass, shoot, and most importantly, think. Whereas a lot of other coaches that just see the game through the lens that they played in, so many other coaches, you know, regards when they played, they just see it a little differently. So I think maybe I have the ability to connect on a better level, but just a different level than so many coaches that they've interacted with in the past.
Yeah, that's awesome. One thing, and you're much too kind when you said the era we grew up in. I think you grew up in the era of maybe REM and Hootie Blowfish, and I happened to grow up in the area of the Temptations and Neil Diamond. So I appreciate your kindness.
There are some commonalities there.
You know, much as, you know, people talk about this era, for lack of a better term, of the portal of the NIL, in a lot of ways, but how much more difficult it's been to become, to create and maintain a positive culture. How do you think Mac's been able to sustain such a high level, not just of being a successful team, but of maintaining that type of culture? And how can you navigate those waters in the years to come, do you think?
Well, Mac's deal is really simple. You know, there's obviously additional layers to it all, and there's nuance involved that I'm going to oversimplify it here. But Mac has a saying, and it's something we talk about consistently when we're sitting in recruiting meetings, when we're evaluating players. Most of the time, because of the computer now, we've seen every one of these kids' clips from all their AAU games. We already know if they can play. We're not at the games to evaluate, you know, them as players at that point. It's nice to see it. We want to see, number one, do they compete? Number two, are they a good teammate? But probably most importantly, and this is Mac's number one non-negotiable, he says it all the time. He reminds the staff all the time. It's something that I think is of critical importance when you put together a roster, when you're in that position where you do pick the players on your team. All the different player development things we have, the mental things we have, the strength and conditioning we have, there is no drill. There is no methodology to make a selfish person into an unselfish basketball player. And so the one non-negotiable Mac has in our program is to recruit unselfish human beings. And do we get it right all the time? No. But there's a consistent and a constant focus on bringing unselfish human beings into our program. And we tried to replicate that at High Point. I think for the most part, we got it right. Maybe missed on one or two, but out of 20 some odd guys we brought in there, pretty good. And I think Mac is, Mac is in my opinion, way ahead of the ball game in that space. And I think as we've moved into this new era with NIL and transfer portaling and just all these external forces that were not a part of the game in the past, I think it's really allowed this program to even go to another level because of that extreme focus in that one particular area. And maybe even more important, he won't deviate from that. Like even when the number of really talented players that Mac has just said, you know what, they don't fit us, and being okay with that. The other thing we talk about all the time, you don't mess a program up by missing a recruit. You mess a program up by bringing the wrong guy in and having him be in your locker room. And I think having that thought process as it relates to that unselfishness piece, I think, has been a recipe for sustained success.
You know, and you mentioned, I think the intentionality, which your numbers at High Point seem to point to 90% or above kind of being right. You can probably, because we're human beings, we're going to make mistakes. You can probably afford a 1 out of 10 mess up every once in a while, but probably not a 4 or 5 out of 10 yeah. if you're not intentional about it.
And somebody told me once, you get one of these guys that's the, you can call them whatever you want to call them. You get one butthead in your program, you're okay. You get two, they start to have babies. And so you want to try to nip that in the bud. And there's a lot of coaches that do a great job with low character players and bringing them along. That's just not here. It's not Mac's system. It's not going to be my system. Whenever I'm in charge, what makes our program offensively click is the fact that we have so much freedom in what we do. And if that goes to someone that's selfish and can't get outside themselves as far as how they want to play offensive basketball, it's never going to work here.
No, it wouldn't. Coach, lastly, for the Creighton fans that might be giving a listen, what have you seen so far? Obviously, a lot of changes. I guess what gives you great excitement looking ahead to this season, and if any cause for maybe not concern, but at least a little, we might need some additional work here.
We don't handle the ball particularly well. That's probably our greatest challenge right now. When you combine that with 9 new faces, that makes it, the ball's flying all over the gym right now. They weren't particularly ball secure. That was something at High Point. We were very ball secure. We were in the top 10 in the country at not turning the ball over both years, which is something we need to kind of get back to here. Ashworth, for as great as he was, turned the basketball over a lot. We've got to take elite care of the basketball if we want to be the team we think we can be. Well, we've got a lot of young, talented pieces. We've got a lot of depth. What makes me most excited is the new. What gives me pause is probably also the new. This roster was put together in a little bit in an odd fashion, because we were told in the spring that Fedor Zukić was permanently ineligible. And then the NCAA waited 2 months and came back, and after threat of legal action, gave Fedor 2 more years. So we brought in 2 guys to replace Fedor, the 30 minutes he was going to play, and now he's back. So we've got this odd kind of log jam at a couple of spots, and then Owen Freeman showed up. We knew he had a little meniscus injury, and it ended up being a spiral tear that he had to have repaired. So it went from being a 6-week recovery to a 6-month recovery. So he brought in another big guy there, and he's probably going to be okay for the season now. So we've got these log jams at a couple places, and we've got some internal things we're going to have to work on because we're going to have some really talented players for the first time here in a while that aren't going to get much of an opportunity. And, you know, that's going to be a dynamic that we have to manage in house. And I think as long as we can, you know, we can stay healthy and, you know, kind of be about the person next to us to our left and our right and manage those expectations of those guys that aren't going to get probably as much opportunity as what we told them in the recruiting process, because we didn't know that Fedor was going to be back. You know, as long as we can manage those things, we have enough talent to win. It's just there's going to be some bumps along the road. And we play an exhibition game tonight. We're going to have a couple 3-starters not play. So, you know, we'll get there. And hopefully the fans will stick with this as we grow and learn and have some bumps along the road. The best team I can compare this team to is the team that had Trey Alexander and Ryan Nemhard and Arthur Kaluma, those guys as freshmen. Because we had all this talent, and I feel the same way with all this talent on this team, on that team, same as this one. That team ultimately was all held together by a kid that was a Division II transfer in Ryan Hawkins, who's probably the greatest leader and winner I've ever been a part of around. And so if we have somebody that can step up and do what Hawk did for us, we'll have a special year. And if we don't, we're going to have to try to piece it together.
Well, it'll be exciting. I think that Mac and you with Mac have earned obviously some latitude, and I don't think there's any question that the fans will be patient. Maybe some not.
That's probably not. That's why they call them. I think fan is short for fanatic for a reason.
Yes, and they're great, but sometimes they can be a little sour at times too. But I know you guys love them and they love the Jays. So look forward to it. And again, Coach, appreciate it. Welcome back. And let's go Jays this year.
Thanks for having me.
We have free resources available on advisorgameplan.com. If you would like to gain access to our full version of client resources, please contact us today on advisorgameplan.com to explore becoming a client. Also, subscribe today to Thriving Sports and stay up to date with future episodes and more interviews with more coaches. Together, let's be thriving coaches that put the player first in all situations. See ya!